This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3807 for Tuesday, the 7th of March, 2023. Today's show is entitled, Peepaw Builds a Computer. It is the 20th show of Brian in Ohio and is about 34 minutes long. It carries a clean flag. The summary is, Brian starts the process of building an 8-bit retro computer.
Hello, Hacker Public Radio. Brian in Ohio here. I'm out from under my rock, and I'm doing another group of shows on a project that I've become interested in. And so you might notice the title of the show is Peepaw Builds a Computer. And you might ask yourself, who's Peepaw? Well, that's me. And that's at least that's who my grandson, who's 2 years old, has started calling me. He calls me Peepaw. And I've thought, you know, I'm a little bit into computers and electronics and hobby stuff, and I'm thinking maybe sometime in the future when he's a little older, it'd be fun to show him a computer that he, if he wants to, could build, and we could build it together. So to get a little bit of a lead turn on this, I thought, oh, maybe I should go through this myself and document it on HPR as a template, as some notes to myself in the future when me and my grandson might run through this project in together in real life. So why a retro computer? There's a couple reasons. The first is I think that an 8-bit computer is a computer that anybody could put together and kind of really delve into the inner workings of a computer. You can do it with a microcontroller too, but it's being more a microcontroller having all of its components inside of itself. It's a little bit more interesting to have all the peripherals and everything on the outside and having to put that stuff together. It gives you some real understanding of what's going on, at a real foundational level. And so then you might ask, why the Z80? I grew up using Commodore 64s, which are 6502 based. But when you look at the cost of a 6502 chip now, they're about $15, whereas a Z80 is less than $5. And so cheap is an important part. I think having something that's inexpensive that can take care of the goals that you want to meet, that's the way to go there. 6502s and Z80s are both still available. I think the Z80s, I know they're still making them. I don't know if they still make them in the DIP packages that I'm going to use for this project, but certainly they're out there, easy to get. And did I say they're cheap? Yeah, they're cheap. So that's the way to go. So my plan is, I want to build this from scratch. There's certainly lots of kits out there. There's lots of very well done boards and tutorials online, and I've looked at a lot of those things, and I'm garnering knowledge from them. That's great, but I want to build this from scratch. I want to be able to point to this thing and say, yeah, I put that here, I did this here, I made this mistake there, things like that. And so the real template that I'm using is a computer called the Tech One. The Tech One was introduced in the 80s at Talking Electronics magazine. So Talking Electronics was an Australian magazine that didn't last that long, 15 or so issues. And in three or four of them, they described this computer, this Z80 computer that you could build. Looks a little bit like Kim One was a single board computer that was built by MOS Technologies, basically as a marketing device for their 6502 chip. So the Tech One uses a Z80, and all those issues are available on the website. Basically, everything that the founder of Talking Electronics, his name is Colin Mitchell. he's basically put everything that he ever has done out in the public domain, and he encourages people to use his ideas and use his stuff to build projects and learn about electronics. It's kind of a cool idea. A guy thinking ahead about free culture long before it was, you know, really a popular to say open source like it is now. Another book that's out there is called Build Your Own Z80 Computer. It's a 1981 book written by Steve Ciaracia. And it's available at archive.org. There's links for all this stuff in the show notes. And that book's kind of a good roadmap on how to build something, a system, starting from nothing. There's things in it that aren't going to be applicable. Some of the RAM, he uses dynamic RAM, and I probably won't use that, although I might in the future, maybe, I don't know. But there's other things, and there's parts that he uses that you can find that are hard to get and you'd have to substitute. So those are just some of the little things you have to, you know, as you go along, you have to figure out how you're going to do it and how other people have maybe gotten around some of the problems. To get started, I'm going to do the most basic thing, is I'm going to build a no-op tester, which I'll explain here in a few minutes. But there's a link at the z80.info site, and it shows a picture of a no-op tester. And it I'm going to do that, but I'm going to do it not with hardware. I'm going to use software. And like I said, I'll explain in a second. So I also want the system to be expandable. I want it to be able to grow and try to see, push the limits, see how far I can get with building a system like this. I want to keep the cost down, so that's always going to be in the forefront of the idea. Even if it's more difficult but a little bit less expensive, maybe I'll go with the more difficult route. And eventually, my goal would be to work up to a system like the Jupiter Ace. So Jupiter Ace was a computer that was built around the same time, in the 80s. See if I can pull up the page here. It built in the 82, a computer that looks a little bit like the Sinclair ZX Spectrum or ZX81, both computers that I really don't have any knowledge of, or I never got to use those things here in the United States of America. But the Jupiter Ace, its big difference, well, there's lots of differences, but one of the main difference from a user perspective then compared to the ZX80s or 81s is that it boots into Forth. And if you haven't noticed, I do like Forth as a computer language. And so whereas other systems were booting into BASIC, the designers of the Jupiter Ace had it boot into a Forth environment and used Forth for its main interaction with the computer. So that's the plan. So how to get started? To get started, I'm going to build a no-op tester and do a no-op test on a Z80 chip that I have right now. And to do that, I'm going to use an Arduino Mega board and some Forth to spin up the most basic Z80 system. Now, again, this is not a new idea. There's a project at 8-Bit Force that's called a Retro Shield, and they have a shield for an Arduino Mega that that you can do basically what I'm going to do right now. But I don't want to use the Arduino IDE. I'm happy with Forth, and I understand Forth, and I think Forth is a better way to go with a microcontroller anyway. So that's what I'm going to do. But it turns out a no-op test is pretty easy, actually. If you give a Z80 chip a 5 volts, a clock, and the right data on the data bus, it will just happily start running through its address space doing nothing. It basically does no operation, a no op test. And so that's what this episode's about, actually, is to get a no op tester functioning. But there's actually another step back from there. Most of the no op testers that you'll see out there use LEDs and resistors and probably some kind of external, like a 555 timer for the clock, and put those things together to do the no op test. And what I propose doing is to do to use all of the capabilities of the Arduino Mega board in order to not have to use any LEDs or anything. Just actually, my goal here is to use an Arduino Mega, a solderless breadboard, the Z80 chip, and just a few wires to get the job done, to see if this chip actually still works. And in order to do that, I'm going to make a logic probe, and specifically a logic probe, a software logic probe in Forth. Basically, what I'm going to make is a frequency counter using the facilities of the Arduino Mega to do that. If you don't know what a logic probe is, there is a link in the show notes for that. And this episode, I've actually went to an app note that's available at the Microchip website, which Microchip bought, acquired at Atmel, which was the makers of the Atmega chips, and but they acquired all of their app notes and everything. So there's an app note, DOC8365, and it talks about using an AVR microcontroller as a frequency counter. And in that app note, there's a section about using a gated method to do frequency counting. And so what that means is you're going to use what they call an external interrupt to count how many times something cycles from high to low, and for a certain period of time, and then so they use 100 milliseconds as an idea, and then if you take that, how many times you counted it in 100 milliseconds, you multiply it by 10, you get a frequency. Pretty simple system. And so they're in the Flash Forth website. There's a tutorial on counting button presses, and that's pretty helpful in designing this frequency counter, this logic probe. And there's a link in the show notes for that too. It tells you how to set up some registers on a different kind of chip, a PIC chip, but you know, with a little bit of thought, you can easily set it up on an AVR chip or an old AVR chip, an Atmega chip. So this project's going to need an Arduino Mega running FlashForth, and Arduino Mega is the reason to use that versus the regular Arduino Uno is because of the amount of I/O, the amount of pins that are available on it. The Arduino Mega has four 16-bit timers, two 8-bit timers. It's got 50 pins that you can use as input and output, so there's plenty of I/O space to interact with a Z80 chip. Some of the other things you'll need to do this project is the data sheet for the Atmega 2560, link in the show notes, some jumper wires, and a Z80, and a solderless breadboard, which I should add that to the show notes here. Um, I'll do that. Add that there. Solderless breadboard. So I've done this. I've written some fourth words to solve this problem. Fourth is a problem-oriented language. You start with the base dictionary, and then you create words to solve the problem that we have. So the problem that we have is I wanted to be able to make a software logic probe. And so a logic probe at its very simplest will tell you, you can probe inside of a digital system and see if a pin is high, whatever the high voltage level is. In this case, it'd be 5 volts, or low, which is ground, so in the, or 0 volts. And, or if the pin is pulsing, if it's transitioning through those states. It's not going to give you a frequency, and that's really not its point. The point is, hey, is there activity on that pin? Is there, or is it just high or low? And with that, you can do some diagnosis. It's a troubleshooting device, and that's what we're going to use it for too. But we're going to, instead of buying one, which you can still do easily, they're not that expensive, we're just going to use this Arduino Mega to do those things. And so in order to do that, I think I've mentioned this before, the best way to look at if you're just glossing through some fourth code, which is here in the show notes, is to start from the bottom. The bottom most word is probably the word that will get you the farthest in understanding what's going on in this vocabulary. And so the bottom most word in this little bit of code is sample pin. And so sample pin says the line sample pin has, first off, it has a little parentheses and a couple dashes, and that's a kind of a fourth standard. No, not standard is not the right word. A fourth, I guess standard. It's called a stack effect comment. Basically, what it says is that this sample pin has nothing coming in on the stack, and it leaves nothing on the stack when it's done. And so what it does is it calls a word open gate, it then waits, it then closes the gate, and then it calls a word process data. So it's this sample pin is defined by these four words: open gate, wait, close gate, and process the data. And so if you listen, then you know that this is what we talked about in the frequency counter. We're going to open a gate, wait for a period of time, close the gate, and then we're going to look at see how many counts we got to see what frequency this pin is oscillating at. Or, if the barring that, if there's no oscillation, is it high or low? So then, if you look up a little bit, there the first word that you see above sample pin is wait. Wait says 100 milliseconds, and it has, again, no stack effects. And in Flash Fourth, although MS is a word, stands for milliseconds, and basically it's just, I think Arduino has this too. You give it a number and it pauses for that many milliseconds, doesn't do anything, just a delay function. So in this case, it's a fixed 100 milliseconds. That's what I'm using as the wait time, and then it closes the gate. So let's take a look at open and closing of the gates. Those are a little bit higher up. Opening the gate, I guess maybe now would be the best time to just think a little bit about what's this fourth code. The first thing to think about is constants, and the constants are declared higher up in the code, and the first line of that has the word constant in it is this line that says $100 constant pin H, and so this is where I'm using a constant merely as a labeling system for these ports that that are defined in the at Mega data sheet. And so if you don't really know this, you all of the functionality of a microcontroller is controlled through the manipulation of these registers. And in the at Mega 2560, there's 100 hex numbers of these mapped into RAM. And so if you look at the data sheet, there's a section called Registry Summary. It's toward the bottom of the data sheet, and it has all of the registers. And some of the registers just take a full 8-bit number, and some of them are broken down, where each bit in that 8-bit byte that is that register sets up a function of some peripheral, be it the serial port, the timers, which is what we're going to use here, the whether or not there's interrupts, or whether or not a pin is can be used to input data or output, whether or not you're going to do pulse width modulation. So when you're using Arduino and you set up something like digital pin X and it's as an output, you're manipulating the registers, but it's obfuscated from you. You're not directly, unless you dig into it, you won't really know what's going on. But in Forth, it's all exposed to you. But in that, you also need to make sure that you have to make sure that you understand what's going on, because you can make things quit functioning that you need to function. But anyway, so I've defined some constants here, and to use those as labels, because it sure is easier to say, hey, I want to make a pin on port H high, easier than remembering $102. And then there's quite a number of these that I've defined as constants, and they consist of the ports that we're going to need for this project. And the ports we're going to use are port H. Port H has three registers connected to it: pin H, DDRH, and port H. They're at hex 100, hex 101, and hex 102. We're going to use the timer counter register 4, which is hex A0, A1, and A8. And we're going to use port E, which has its three registers at hex 2 Charlie, 2 Delta, and 2 Echo. And lastly, we're going to use the external interrupt control register for pin. Where is that pin? That's on the E port, on port E. And then we're going to use, there's a mask to do some bit manipulation. There's a mask to do some controlling of that, of how that pin sees inputs and what it should do. So those constants are defined there. There's a couple of variables also. Compare is a number that compare is going to be a value that we use, and count is a value that we're going to use. In Forth, when you use a constant, if I use it after I've defined it, if I type in pin H after I just defined pin H, what it does is it'll put the value that pin H has in it on the stack, which is $100 in this case, with a variable, because you can change the contents of a variable. When you put a variable's name, when you call it, it initially just puts where the value is stored, what register it is, and then you use a couple of other words to decide what you're going to do with that. Those words are the at symbol and the exclamation symbol, and those stand for fetch and store. The at sign fetch fetches the value from that register, and the exclamation point stores a value into that variable. A couple other Forth words that we're going to use for this is mset, mclear, and mtest. And those are unique to Flash Forth. Those are to help with bit manipulation in a microcontroller like the Atmega 2560. We're also going to use a timer. The timer we're going to use is timer 4. Timer 4 has the ability to toggle the value of pin 6 on the Arduino board, high or low, in the background at a certain frequency. And we're going to use that for initially as a test function, just to test to see if this logic probe is going to work. And lastly, we're going to use that that external interrupt register to manipulate pin 2, I think it is pin 2, on the board, on the Arduino Mega board. We're going to use to use it as a external interrupt device. The meat of the logic probe begins at the word ext4.irq. It's an interrupt routine that when there's an interrupt on that pin, it's going to increase the count, the value in count by one. It fetches count, increases by one, stores the value back into count. The logic probe itself is initialized with a few words that are in the defining the word logic probe init. And what you're doing is you're setting up timer register 4 to do what they call CTC mode. What it does is it runs a timer. It has a compare register, and it just continuously compares that number to what's in the timer. And when the number hits the timer count, it toggles the value that's on pin 6, and then resets the timer counter to 0, and then continues to do that. It does that just in the background. So what we're doing is we're setting up a timer, we're getting it to toggle this pin high and low, and then we're going to do some other stuff. And this is where the microchips are. Things like in Arduino, you don't necessarily see this, but it's stuff that runs in the background. It's not really, they're not interrupts. They're actually peripherals running in the background that the microprocessor works and queries when it needs to, when you need it to query it. The rest of the logic probe init is just to set up the correct pins as inputs, inputs and outputs, and to set some pull-up registers, and then it attaches that interrupt routine to the interrupt vector table, and to fire off that interrupt when it happens. So I like to find a few other words: start clock and stop clock. That's just to start and stop timer 4. There's a word set frequency that allows you to change the compare value to change the frequency of the what's happening on that pin. There's a pin high and a pin low, and that basically allows us to set the value at port H to high or to low to test out the logic probe. And then there's those words open gate and close gate. Open gate sets the count to 0, starts the interrupt routine, and then close the gate shuts off the interrupt routine. And then in processing the data, it does a little bit of it reduces the count in count by one, and that's a thing you need to do just to clean up the numbers and get an accurate reading. And then if there is a count, that means that the pin is oscillating, then it's going to return the frequency by multiplying that value by 10 and then printing it out. If the count is 0 or less, meaning that there was no oscillations, it basically will interrogate pin H and then tell you if the pin is high or low. And there's the functionality of that logic probe. So just a few words. it does, the difference between when I built this up, the really cool thing is basically you can interactively test all these things. You can manipulate these registers and work at the fourth prompt to make sure things work and understand it before you build up your vocabulary and you end up with to be able to solve this problem. If you're interested in that, there's more. I did some fourth episodes earlier, fourth on an Arduino, and then there's all kinds of information on the web on fourths on microcontrollers. So the actual test I'm doing here, just to get this, there's a picture. It's got the Arduino board with the one wire hooked from pin 2 to pin 4. What'll happen is it start the 16-bit timer running at 100 hertz. Then we'll do a little bit manipulation, set it high or low, and then we'll sample the pin to see if it works. And so after uploading this vocabulary and starting the Arduino board, I put the output from the serial terminal in the show notes. And so you start out with that, the fourth prompt, which is okay, and then a couple of brackets and a hashtag sign in RAM. That's the fourth prompt. And the first word you type in is logic probe init. That just sets up the timer and the pin. And then you type in sample pin. And then the output from that, it says is freq equals 100, which is 100 hertz is what we expect. And so it's telling us it's oscillating at 100 hertz. And now if we stop the clock, you're going to sample the pin, and it's either going to come up as low or high. In this case, it told us that the pin is low. And then we can set the pin high by using the word pin high and sample the pin again, and it says that the pin is high. And now if I put in, so the original compare value was 1,249. So if I divide that by 10 and use it, say, just roughly 125, the frequency should go up by 10 times because we're causing the interrupt that triggers 10 times faster. So you should see a frequency of about 1,000. And so what I did was the next thing I did was I put 125 and I called the word set frequency, which basically changes the compare value. I started the clock again and then I sampled the pin, and sure enough, the frequency that comes out of it is 1,000. So it seems like the logic probe is working. And with that, I'll bring this show to a close. A little bit rambly, but it was interesting. I think with the show notes and a little thought, you can probably all figure out what I was doing here. For the next show, I'll repurpose that 16-bit clock and actually use it to drive a Z80. I'll hook up the data port to the Arduino Mega, and then we'll set up a no-op test. So we'll have power, a clock, and we'll give it some data, and we'll use the logic probe to see if there's any activity on the address bus to see if the pin is if the chip is working. So we'll do that in the next episode. We'll use this logic probe to move to the next step, which will be an actual no-op test of this chip. So if you have any questions or comments, feel free to leave them in the show notes. If you like Forth, or if you're doing something with retro computers, please do some episodes for us. It's always interesting. And if you want to get a hold of me, I think my email is available there and at HPR. Feel free to email me. And so this is Brian in Ohio. I'm signing off. And I want to remind everybody that you are more than your body.
Been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is.
hosting for HBR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.